where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 joint increase the power.
Hi friends! I'm happy to say the hiatus for the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast has ended. While I most certainly missed creating a show in November, it was kind of nice to relax a little. But here we are, nearly at the end of 2016. What better way to jump back in the saddle than discussing Konami's 1991 classic O-West-inspired side-scrolling shooter, Sunset Riders. Now this is a rather special episode, friends. For one thing, this marks the first time I'll be talking about a four-player arcade cabinet. More importantly is the fact we have a very special guest that will be joining us later for an interview. A young man, a 10-year-old boy, by the name of William Burton, who's not only a big fan of the Arcadia Retrocade, but of the show itself. Sunset Riders was released to the Wild West of the arcades back on September 4th of 1991. Developed and published by Konami, the game director was Hideyuki Sugimoto, who, 3 years previously, created 1988's Super Contra, and in 2005 would help design Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Mutant Nightmare, as well as TMNT, Mutant Melee. As you heard from that brief clip a little earlier, Sunset Riders also boasts a rather incredible soundtrack. That is thanks to Motoaki Furukawa, a well-known video game composer to say the least, as he also had a hand in the music for such games as 1987's Metal Gear, as well as 1988's Super Contra, and the Blade Runner-esque Snatcher. Motoaki also worked on 1993's shooter Lethal Enforcers, 1993's Castlevania, Rondo of Blood, 1996's Gradius the Deluxe Pack, and 1999's Castlevania, which was for the Nintendo 64. Gone was the 2D side-scrolling platformer mechanics, replaced by 3D, like in The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time. Now, before I get into the rules and such, I have to say that the first time I played Sunset Riders wasn't at that Showbiz Pizza of my youth. It had already become a Chuck E. Cheese by 1991. Heck, it wasn't even at an arcade. It was in the lobby of our local Cobb Cinema. It didn't even have an official arcade cabinet, friends. That cinema had video games installed in some of the pillars of the lobby near the concession stand. Just these little boxes, big enough to house a monitor and a control stick with a multi-button setup. That way they could switch in a new JAMA board, like Sunset Riders, when they needed to. For those that don't know, JAMA boards started being seen around 1985. It stands for Japanese Arcade Machine Manufacturers Association, and basically it allows an arcade owner to simply convert one arcade game to another. A good example is the Neo Geo arcade system. Tired of Metal Slug? In this case, you literally unplug a large cartridge and swap in a new one. Sunset Riders tasks 1-4 players with taking on the roles of 4 brave bounty hunters. There was a 2-player version made, I guess for places like movie theater lobbies and gas stations, where they didn't have as much room. Depending on where the player would insert their quarters or tokens, in the 4-player version, they could play as Steve, Billy Bob, or Kermano. In the 2-player cabinets, you were actually able to select which character you wish to play. By the way, I saw on Clove, the killer list of video games site, that in the Japanese version of the game, the 4 heroes were named Garrett, Daniel, Tyler, and Caleb. The game has a really nice cartoony, or maybe I should say anime feel, with the graphics. All 4 heroes are individually colored and distinct in their appearances. Steve has a pinkish hat, holster, and boots with yellow pants, and uses a 6-shooter. Billy also uses the same type of gun, but is decked out in blue with white pants. Now, Cremano is sporting a purple sombrero with the addition of a pink and red striped poncho. He's also wearing some red pants, and he happens to be armed with a shotgun. Last but not least is my favorite of the bounty hunters, Bob, attired in fetching green pants with a brown vest. He puts down troublesome bandits with the aid of his rifle. Now, I've never found any evidence of this, but I have always believed that Bob was actually supposed to be a female. Just something about the way the character looks in the game, especially in the horse riding stages with the chaps that he's wearing. I just really have to wonder if Bob wasn't meant to be an Annie Oakley or Belle Starr type of character. Like I said, I've not found any evidence of this anywhere, but I truly did point this out the first time I played the game with my friends at the Cobb Theater. Besides the distinct looks of the four bounty hunters, the weapons they use behave differently from one another. For example, the six shooters that Billy and Steve use fire faster, but don't have the spread of Cormano and Bob's weapons. That wide spread, of course, makes it easier to take out enemies as you move through the stage. Having said that, the rifle and shotgun can't be fired as quickly as the six shooters. A player controls their chosen bounty hunter with the aid of an eight-way joystick, allowing movement up and down, right and left, and diagonally in those directions. The player also has a jump button, which comes in handy when you need to avoid enemy bullets and other hazards. Players can also use the joystick and jump button together to, say, climb up on a balcony or chandeliers in certain stages, as well as performing a short sliding maneuver across the screen by pulling diagonally down on the joystick when pressing the jump button. Of course, since this game takes place in the Old West, you can be sure you'll be doing a whole heck of a lot of slinging lead. Also of note is in the game there are environmental hazards that a player can shoot to dispatch enemies, like hanging barrels and oil lanterns to name a few. When playing with multiple people, it's wise to keep an eye out though. A stray shot might release a barrel, and it will fall, and it might crush a fellow player. Obviously, players get points for shooting down bandits in the game, as well as their gang leaders. Although, in this case, your score is actually displayed as money. Which makes sense, as you're playing a bounty hunter, right? To be honest, though, no one playing Sunset Riders is worried about their score. They are just trying to get through the eight stages and the bosses so they can take down the villainous Sir Richard Rose. When a player has obtained 50,000 points, or dollars, they are awarded an extra life. I mentioned hazards just a second ago. Obstacles and foes that players need to be wary of include enemies tossing bombs and Molotovs. The latter causes a line of flame to spread across the level. Sticks of dynamite that are carried by angry cowgirls, which can be picked up and thrown back if the player is quick enough. There are logs dropped out of the back of wagons in the horse riding stages, masked bandits that are quick to spray lead at our heroes, enemies that run at you with the intention of knifing you, and the bounty hunters even have to face a couple of stampedes by angry bulls. Thankfully for the bounty hunters, in the case of the running of the bulls, they can leap up with the jump button and, rather comically, run on the backs of them until the coast is clear. Now the players do have some power-ups to keep their eyes out for, to help make the game a little easier. During a stage, you might come across open doors. Pushing up with the joystick will allow the bounty hunter to pop inside and possibly pick up a gold badge, which grants you the quick draw ability. Which means you can just hold the fire button in and let the bullets fly. Or you might get the two-gun silver badge, letting you now dual-wield your character's weapon. This is especially useful for Billy and Steve, as it allows their bullets to have a wider spread. Of course, if your bounty hunter is taken out by an enemy or environmental hazard, you lose those abilities. I should add that when you enter those open doors, you're generally treated to the bounty hunter getting a quick kiss on the cheek from a saloon girl before they emerge back on the street, or even seeing your character guzzling down some moonshine. These power-ups can also be obtained by shooting sack-carrying bandits, but they might also be carrying gold dust or roast chicken, which is only useful in regards to score. The first bandit leader the player must take on is Simon Greedwell. After fighting your way through a typical western town, this rather corpulent boss greets you with...
It's time to pay.
Greedwell is in the upper middle part of the screen. On the left and right side are balconies, as well as two windows below the boss. A player needs to be careful, as this is where enemy cowboys will appear and start shooting at your bounty hunter. To make matters worse, Greedwell is hiding behind two large purple barrels. These soak up your bullets, preventing your shots from reaching the boss. After numerous shots, they will drop down. Of course, if you happen to be under them, when they do, you will naturally be crushed and lose a life. After filling the boss with enough lead, he tumbles to the ground below and with a groan makes a last request.
Marry me with my money.
With a shout of triumph, the player who landed the most shots on the boss gets the end-stage reward. That's right, even if you have four players, the bounty hunter that did the most damage is the only one to be awarded the $10,000. Stage 2's boss is Hawkeye Hank Hatfield and is worth $20,000 to the player that does the most damage. Bear in mind that before that, you will have to contend with a thrilling ride through the desert on the back of your faithful steed, dealing with bandits also on horseback, and even a locomotive carrying bad guys during the stage. While riding on a horse, you will have to avoid dropped logs from the backs of wagons by leaping over them. The player can also pull down on the joystick, which will allow their bounty hunter to hang to the side of their horse. This allows you to occasionally avoid incoming enemy fire. After dispatching the normal enemies, you come to the train depot, where you are faced by Hatfield.
Draw, Pilgrim!
Much like Greedwell, Hank likes to hide. In this case, there are four crates, ducking behind them so your shots can't reach him. He'll raise up and fire off some shots at you before rolling to the right or left to hide behind another crate. Of course, you also have to look out for the masked bandits who appear on the upper sides of the screens, trying to shoot you down in the street. Hank, when he receives enough damage, tries one last trick. He'll leap down next to you, duck down, and take aim. You'll have to be quick to avoid getting shot. But once you hit him with another blast, he admits defeat.
You got me.
After stages 2 and 5, the players will have a bonus stage, which is set up like a mini-game, where bandit targets pop up in different spots of the screen. The viewpoint also changes in these stages to a first-person point of view. This is just for bonus points, but it does have one of my favorite themes in the game, entitled Quick Draw. For stage 3, once you make your way through another western town, you will find yourself outside a saloon, where the players are confronted by Dark Horse.
You in deep, big trouble.
A hulking, shirtless cowboy astride a mighty black steed. A horse wearing metal plates, which means you must make sure your shots are hitting its rider to do any good. You'll constantly have to jump up on the balcony to avoid getting trampled by the horse and rider, as well as deal with the normal masked bandits taking shots at you. After you land enough shots on Dark Horse,
me in deep, big trouble.
The villain slumps over in his saddle before the horse takes off. The player with the best aim nets $30,000 for their troubles. But after dispatching that foe, a poor saloon girl is thrown through the swinging doors to land at your feet.
You all right, ma'am?
Oh, those terrible men. Please help.
All right, ma'am. Don't worry about it.
It appears there's trouble inside the saloon, which is where you will immediately have to contend with the next boss, or bosses in this case, those dastardly twins, the Smith brothers. These two villains, and yes, you will have to take both of them out, are more than happy to stay in the upper right and left sides of the screen, on their little balconies, protected by saloon signs as they hurl bombs down at you. Worse, those bombs cause a small fire that lasts a few seconds, so players will be forced to jump over them. Thankfully, there is a rather large swinging chandelier that you can jump up and pull yourself onto, so your shots can make contact. You can can't stand in one spot, though, as the Smith brothers will toss those explosive devices at you on the chandelier as well. Eventually, if your aim is true, you will lay the Smith brothers low. Hopefully, you'll be the player that gets the $40,000 bounty. The players are then treated to a can-can dance from the saloon girls you've saved from the Smith brothers, before learning that it's time now to set out and defeat Sir Richard Rose. To do that, the players will have to get past three more bosses. Stage 5's leader is El Greco, who happens to be stationed on a speeding train. So you will have to cross over the tops of train cars, climb stacked crates on the train, all the while avoiding enemy fire, as well as making sure to jump over or duck the occasional passing obstacle. Finally, you will reach the front of the train, and El Greco himself. Greco is armed with a whip as his main weapon, and he's rather agile. He's constantly jumping around the screen. The main problem is he's carrying a shield made from the train's coal door, so your shots will have no effect against it. Your bullets must connect with his feet, or a player must jump behind him. Taking him out will grant you the $50,000 reward, and if you're playing Cormano, well, I'm going to let William Burton share that little secret.
Adios, amigo.
After a second bonus stage, players must test their mettle against Chief Scalpum at the end of Stage 6. This would be a pretty good time to point out something you've probably already noticed. I'm referring to the less than PC names and stereotypes used in the game. Now granted, the game mirrors the same Western stereotypes used in movies in the 50s, which inspired this game, but it can still be a little cringe-inducing. The players must make their way through a mountain pass. No masked bandits this time, but warrior braves. You even have to navigate a makeshift gondola of sorts before you face off against the chief.
Me ready for powwow.
Yeah, that happens in the game. The chief, like El Greco, jumps around the stage, but this foe also tosses daggers at you when he isn't landing close enough to you to try and slice you open with his machetes. Unlike the other bosses, though, when you defeat the chief, something altogether different occurs.
Be powwowed out.
Please, don't shoot my brother. He's only following orders.
All right, ma'am, we won't shoot him.
The players in this case will holster their weapons, and the one that did the most damage gets $60,000. The boss of Stage 7 is Paco Loco. This is another horse riding stage. This time, though, the players must pass through a forest setting, dispatching foes on horseback until reaching a rather large wooden wall, which Loco stands upon when you come into view, beating his chest in anger before brandishing a Gatling gun. To survive this part of the stage, it takes quite a bit of jumping over the enemy bullets and dispatching masked bandits before you can bring Loco low and get that $70,000 bonus. For a moment, you think this big brute isn't ready to give up the fight.
Hasta la bye-bye.
After Loco fires off a few more rounds and then gives up the ghost, the players take a moment to light a bundle of dynamite to blast that wooden wall open. The players then make their way through the fortress until at last they've reached the boss of Stage 8, none other than Sir Richard Rose. It should go without saying, this is the most difficult stage to traverse. It requires a lot of platforming skills to reach the boss. Sir Richard Rose stands outside of his charming mansion with a rose in his mouth, tossing it to the ground as you approach him. Rose prefers to hide behind the lion statuary on his balcony in the middle of the screen. Like his lackey Greedwell, you have to take those out before you can do him any harm, all the while avoiding the masked bandits who want to gun you down. I should also mention that Rose is a lot better shot than the previous bosses, and this end of the stage gets quite intense as you leap over and slide under bullets from the enemies. Once you shot the statues down, Rose will leap down and attempt to shoot you at close range with his Luger. While it does take quite a few shots, eventually he collapses to the floor. Only to jump back up and reveal he was wearing a steel breastplate the entire time, and you have to wear him down again for a second time to claim your $100,000 bounty.
I say, bit of bad luck.
With that, the game treats you to a wonderful animated credit sequence, with the Sunset Riders racing off on horseback, eventually riding off towards the sunset itself. While you may have finished the game, if players have lives left over, the game will begin again with Stage 1, but at a harder difficulty.
Hello, Mr. Dillinger.
Retrost Vault Computer, I'm never going to get you to stop calling me that, am I? I bet you're about to tell me that William Burton is here for our interview.
I've got a little challenge for you, a new recruit. He's a tough case, but I want him treated in the usual manner. Train him for the games, let him hope for a while, and blow him away.
Bring him on in.
We have transport.
Friends, I'd like you to meet a wonderful young man, the son of Gary Burton, who you might remember was a guest on the podcast before. Like I mentioned earlier, William is not only a big fan of the arcade, but of the show itself. William, thanks for being on the podcast. Why don't you say hello to the listeners?
Hi.
Now, I've already gone into a little detail of the bosses and such, William, but feel free to add anything you especially liked. Now, when did you first learn of Sunset Riders? When did you first play it?
I actually don't know. The first time I actually came here, I don't know that either.
It is one of your favorite games, though, right?
Yes, it actually is.
Of the four characters you can play in the game, Steve, Billy, Bob, and, rats. I went blank on the fourth bounty hunter all of a sudden.
Cormano.
That's right. Of those four characters, which is your favorite to play?
I'd have to say either between Billy or Cormano.
Any particular reason why you like those two?
Well, on the wiki page for Cormano, on L something, I can't remember the name.
El Greco.
If you beat that boss as Cormano, there's an Easter egg where he switches out his hat to that character's hat, the boss's hat, and he wears it for the rest of the game.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's awesome. For the listeners out there who haven't had the pleasure of playing Sunset Riders, why don't you tell them what it's about?
The game is revolved around American Western age, I think. And there's four characters, Billy, Bob, Steve, and Cormano. Out of all the names, Cormano is really the longest. My favorites are Billy and Cormano. And Cormano actually has a shotgun, and so does Bob. But Bob and Cormano's shotgun are different guns, while Billy and Steve have the same revolver.
Is there any difference in the way Bob and Cormano's weapons fire? I mean, does Bob have a wider spread of fire or anything like that?
No, not really. It's mostly the same, but if you look real closely at both of their guns, they look pretty differently. Bob's gun has some brown, and while Cormano's has, well, it's just all white or gray or whatever that is.
So after choosing a character, what is the point of the game?
I think that the main idea of the game is to get a bunch of money. I mean, it's sort of just like the Old West. You try to get a bunch of money, like the wanted signs and stuff.
Now, since you play as a bounty hunter, do you think they read those wanted posters? I mean, it does say wanted dead or alive. Do you ever just arrest anyone?
Kind of.
Do you have a favorite stage in the game?
I'd say out of my favorite is Paco Loco.
He's the last boss you have to face before reaching Sir Richard Rose, right?
Yes.
Now, William, you said they sort of arrest some of the bosses. What do you mean?
They mostly just shoot them all down and then collect the money afterwards, and then they don't really care about them afterwards. But one of them, an Indian, Chief Scalpin, whenever you kill him, he actually has a sister, and she says, "Please don't shoot my brother." And then just continues on from there.
So they let him live at least?
Kind of. They shot him like a dozen times.
William, throughout the game, the Sunset Riders aren't just walking throughout the Old West, right?
In some levels, I think in 2 or 5, I don't know if that's where they have the bonus mission or not, but in some of the levels, they ride horses, and it's kind of fast-paced at that point.
What do you have to watch out for? I mean, beside are the bandits also on horses, or...
Yes, the bandits are also on horses, which makes them even more difficult to get. But on one of the levels, the bandits are on trains, and the train is also moving, so I think that if you miss one, it doesn't really matter that much.
Are they? They're shooting at you, though, aren't they?
Yes, but their bullets are a lot slower than yours, so you can kill them a lot quicker.
Listeners, before we sat down for this interview, William and I had the chance to play a round of Sunset Riders. We beat the game, in fact. Now... Who earned the most money from all those bounties?
Me.
Do you have any tips or tricks for the listeners?
Mostly just spam all the shots, press the shoot button tons of times, and just go all out.
Now, I noticed that some of the shots, because you had mentioned that they were slower when the enemies fire at you, that sometimes you could even jump up and kind of dodge those bullets if you were, you know, if you're careful enough, especially those boss stages.
Yes.
William, do you mind telling the listeners the first video game you remember playing? Was it here at the Arcadia Retrocade?
I think it was at my house, the Xbox 360, the first video game I ever played. I think I can't remember anything before that. Lego Batman, the video game, is what I remember from the first games I've ever played when I was a kid.
Well, what other games do you like?
Other games that I like are Overwatch, woo-hoo, Minecraft, and that's about it.
Now let me ask you something. You obviously weren't born during the golden age of arcades or video games. What do you think when you get to visit the arcade?
I think that there's, like, a lot of variety in the games, so there's always a game that somebody will like, and if they're bored, there's, like, tons of stuff to do.
So, do you have any favorites?
Any more of my favorites at the arcade are... Battletoads.
Do you like the multiplayer games? Or I should, you know, I mean, like the one-player to four-player games like Battletoads? Like the Turtles? Or do you like X-Men? Captain America and the Avengers?
I don't really like Captain America that much, but the X-Men, I think I do play on the 360 at my house. I think I've gotten past Wendigo. I didn't even know that he was in the Brotherhood. That was pretty interesting.
Now, before you agreed to be transported down here to the Retroist Vault for our interview, you did a bit of research on the various home ports of Sunset Riders, right?
Yes, actually. It was the Sega Genesis and the SNES.
Did you find anything particularly interesting about those ports?
The Sega Genesis actually had the most changes to it. Only two characters were featured in that console. Billy and Cuomano. They each had last names. They weren't even last names. They were just like personalities to a person. Billy Cool and Cuomano Wild.
Besides on the Sega Genesis only being able to pick Billy and Cuomano, was there anything else that was different?
I can't remember from what I read, but yes, I think there is, because it said that it had the most changes.
Since you are such a fan of Sunset Riders, William, I feel like I should ask. Are you a big fan of Western movies? Do you like to read novels about the Old West? Do you like any other Western games? I mean, no offense, my friend. You're a little too young to be playing something like Red Dead Redemption.
No, not really. I don't really play any Western games besides Sunset Riders.
William, I think that... Hey, do you hear that?
Yeah, I think I do.
How did that guy get in here? How did he bring a horse in here?
It's time to pay.
Okay, I got it.
Or be careful, William. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, use your knee. Use your knee. Oh, not that knee. Oh, wow. Oh, elbow. Okay.
Free me with my money.
You okay, William? Wow, you really taught Simon Greenwell a thing or two. Thank you for coming down here to the vault for an interview, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks for interviewing me, Mr. Vic.
It's my pleasure, William. I'll take care of this guy.
Hi-yo, Silver! Away!
And listeners, there he goes, William Burton. Off into the sunset. Somehow, here, because we're in a vault. But William is truly a sunset rider.
And now, these messages.
Whoa! It's Konami's hit coin-op game, Sunset Riders, and it's headed into Super NES territory. Get back in the saddle again with Konami Sunset Riders for the Super NES. Directly converted from the rugged, rough coin-op version, Sunset Riders brings the Wild West home with outstanding graphics and sound technology for realistic scenes and incredible pistol-packing action that'll make gamers feel like they're at the arcade. The reward of riches will have you riding high toward the final showdown as you fend off friend and foe with Boku bravery. Konami's new Sunset Riders for the Super NES.
Greetings. It is I, Red Falcon, the vile alien warlord from Konami's Super C for Nintendo. He never made it past my intergalactic goon squad and diabolic arsenal of destruction. This one never had a chance against my vicious genetic space freaks. And they were no match for my invincible 8th-level invasion. See how far you can get in Super C. You never know where you might end up.
Now, as you heard in the interview with William, there were some differences in the Sega Genesis home port. For example, there are only 4 of the 8 bosses present. Simon Greedwell, Paco Loco, Chief Scalpum, and Sir Richard Rose. There are no voices during the boss introductions and after beating them, but text bubbles like in a comic book take their place. Also of note, is that one button on the Sega Genesis controller lets you jump. The other allows you to fire while walking, but the third one lets you stay stationary, allowing you to control the direction of your firing with a control pad. There are enemy dogs that hound the players in the first stage, dynamite can be shot, and the bonus stages have been altered. Instead of shooting pop-up targets, the players must now chase after a wagon, while a young woman throws out bonus point coins and even extra lives. An interesting addition to the Genesis version is that it had a 2-player versus mode, where players would just plug each other until one dropped. The Super Nintendo was the more faithful port, though some things were changed as well. The Native Americans, or Warrior Braves, in Stage 6 have been replaced with just masked bandits. Chief Scalpum still exists, but received a name change to Chief Wigwam, and was revoiced. Although, like the name, it isn't that much of an improvement.
Ready for powwow.
Also changed in the Super Nintendo version were those dynamite-carrying cowgirls. They were replaced with just masked bandits. Now, I know I said that points do not really matter, but the world record holder for Sunset Riders is Amber McAnally. This was verified by a Twin Galaxies referee on April 20th, 1997. The score listed on the website is 22,290 points, which seems awfully low. Perhaps she got the title because she used only 1/4. Here at the Arcadia Retrocade, well, no one has claimed the high score, but it is hands down one of the most popular of the 4-player games. Shay Mathis picked it up just a month or two before he opened the doors at the arcade. I think memories of playing at the Cobb Theater is one of the reasons he wanted to include it in the collection. And friends, I think that about wraps up our podcast for this go-around. I hope you remember the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast has a Facebook page. It's a great spot to join us to share your own arcade memories and join the celebration of classic arcade and home video games. Our ending theme, which is entitled River Raid, was composed by the extremely talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at tonylongworth.com. If you have any feedback for the show, or perhaps a suggestion for a game to cover, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. The podcast is available for download on iTunes, and I really would appreciate it if you could hop on over there and give us a rating if you like the show. It truly helps to get the word out to new listeners. For further information about the Arcadia Retrocade, please make sure to follow them over on their Facebook page. I'll be sure to provide a link on the Retroist post. Of course, a huge thanks to the Retroist. When you need your daily retro fix, why not visit the site at retroist.com? Friends, have a token on me as we listen to a clip for the game I'll discuss on the next show. This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.